hold hands.
Yeah.
Shit, you stole my line.
Hello.
So yeah, sorry to cut my Zika. He's disappeared. Hello.
It's your blind spot.
The blind spot, right there. Sorry to cut.
So the stick system I thought was very clever. You put it on tools and materials.
Okay, let's make the circle a bit bigger.
We are inclusive.
Let's need a little space for the next.
Yeah, exactly.
This works well.
So put on the tools and materials. You put your name on it, where to find information on the wiki. Which basically tells people that.
The
sorry,
Hackerspace. Hackerspace,
okay. Hackerspace workshop, okay. Yeah. Wouldn't mind you if you switch to this room and we can open this wall because the other workshop is a little bit crowded, so it needs a bigger room.
But is that room actually guaranteedly empty?
Currently, it will be empty, yes. it would be possible for you. You can just continue and I will come in 10 minutes or so, or when this wall is opening and you can switch.
Because this group would go here.
Yes.
Okay.
So just continue and.
You have to check with the people from lockpicking because they said they will be back here in an hour and they want this room back. So if you.
Yeah.
Good luck. Yeah, interruption. Sorry. So there's a reward system via stickers.
No, not the reward system. Put it on the tools and materials so people can see who owns the project and where to find the documentation and what they're allowed to do with it. So the green stickers with public and documented mean that you can use it immediately, or public or it's material or just used.
Yeah.
Whereas the red one is owner only. There's no one either qualified to use the tool or it's a personal material or something like that. So I thought it was very clever because it really instills confidence when someone goes to a tool and says, well, I can pick this up immediately if I just look at the wiki, or I know who to contact to be taught how to use this tool.
There's a rudimentary system kind of like this at the London Hackspace.
It's not as well thought out as this, but we have sort of do not hack stickers, which just have somebody's contact name if there's something in the space that you don't want anyone else to break.
I thought that was clever because you can put it on like a blinking light wall how to get into the wiki, how to put up images on this, on some project.
I mean, this makes it clear whether or not you can use it, something, etc. But you say it really helps as well in stimulating people.
The confidence
part.
Okay. It's not a case of you have to go to someone to learn how to use a soldering iron. If you don't know how to solder, sure. But if you've got tools and materials that people know they're allowed to use, and there's instructions that people think are complete. It really lets people who've never done something like an LED matrix thing. We're finding it hard to get people confident enough to just put together an LED matrix and put it up. Whereas if you've got materials and stuff there, it's like they can just do it.
So I want to ask, leading on from this question, how many spaces are struggling to get new members? And also, it's a genuine thing because I know some spaces are really good at actively involving new people and introducing them to the space and the culture and the people that are already there. And other spaces, they don't do that, but that's not because they're not bad, that's just the way it is. So I wanted to see how people are involving new members who might not be from the traditional hackers. We can all preach to the choir, but I think every space gets people who are not what we would call traditional hackers coming in and wanting to use the space and interact and participate in whatever we've set up. But everybody does it slightly differently, and I wanted to know what ways you have that works really well or seems to kind of be inviting to other people.
Those lockpickers become younger and younger.
The inactivity affects people who are experienced too. It's not about new people. Lots of people who are very experienced just don't do anything until other people have started it and then they join in. So if you have lots of active projects going, people will join, I think.
Yeah. So I know in one hack space in Holland, I think it's in Leeuwarden, it's called Frack. They have a surplus of cash in their membership system. And what they do is they incentivize people to document and show off their project on the wiki with videos and stuff, with the proviso that you are able to get some money for the cost of your project back. And that's a very direct monetary kind of incentivized system. But I don't see that working for spaces above 20 members or that have, and they have no cash. This one only has like 15 to 16 members.
Something I'm quite keen on is a lot of spaces are quite short space.
Yeah.
And they often want to try some system whereby the price of storage is that you document and show off your project.
Oh, interesting.
If you don't actually show that you're actively working on it and document it, then you don't get to store it in the space. So it's another way you could incentivize it.
Yeah, that's nice.
But that only gets into effect when it's finished, right? Because when you're building on it, you store it in the space, but it's not documented either.
Well, you can document it as you're building it, of course.
We're struggling pretty hard. We started with a day a week where we would keep the hackerspace open and I'll meet and then do some talking, but no major project work. And then we had the experience that people drop in and nobody actually cared about them because everyone was chatting with someone or drinking beer or surfing the web or
so
whatever.
This is on your social line? Is this on your hackerspace
social
line?
Yeah. Some of the problems.
Yeah.
And we started to care more about that and we showed people around. But there was still the point where the standard program had its end. And then, there's this. And the people were quite confused because they got 200 bullet points of information force fed in a quarter of an hour. And then there was this, okay, now you're on your own again. So we were struggling to keep it connected to the rest of the activity, the remainder. Yeah.
So one idea that me and Martin Dittus, who's a board member of the London Hack Space, kind of talks about, it's based off of our Tech Inc. Hackerspace logo, which is actually a printed circuit.
Yeah.
And when you join as a member and come along, you can have a little board, you can do some SMD soldering to make the batch. And me and Martin thought it would be nice for new people to be put together in a group of 2 to 3, maybe 4 people, and be given a shared project. And they can learn how to use the space, the culture of being in the space and using the tools and talking to other people, but also have something physical at the end of it. I haven't suggested this to my hackerspace yet or talked any further. But if you have any critique on that, do you think that would work in your spaces? Something collaborative for new and existing people?
You can be Sarah.
Stay.
Yeah, you can stay. So the board will open, but you can stay. And there's nothing. There will be nothing there.
Okay.
Hopefully.
So we also have a social evening on Wednesdays, yeah. And sometimes it works better than other times, sometimes it's just like what you said. And what we also did to attract a lot of new members is organize events, so lectures, parties, and that works because everybody hears about it, brings some friends.
What kind of events are you doing?
Mostly lightning talks, so if it's a big event, then it's several hours of short talks, one after the other. And we had, for the opening of the new space, we had a week of events. So there was a crypto party, IPv6 evening, lockpicking evening, so it was every night.
Would you like to read anything?
But we don't have yet a way of measuring the success of that. So we don't know how many new members we attracted.
Do you think it works?
Yeah.
Yeah. We get new interest.
It's more of a
conversion of interest into actual members.
Yeah.
That seems to be quite interesting.
Yeah, also
I think one of the points about not only do you get new members from all the external people coming in, but you also keep members that you already have refreshed with, oh, this is a guy working on something completely different, but oh, that's a cool project I'd like to do here as well. Because we have had some maybe weird people coming in, and then never again, but you still remember, oh yeah, that's great.
And actually, with us, actually, the lightning talks, we hold it monthly, and that's our biggest draw, and it's amazingly, and people love to give that, and it's, you need a team of like three is what we found, like to kind of manage that whole process, but it works out really well.
Especially, it helps if you keep it going.
Yeah, the recurring event is our biggest draw. And
is it something that you've managed to outsource to, you know, outsource, but the problem is you have a core team where somehow a team of about 10 people end up paying for most of the initiative, right? Of most things in the space. But somehow we are trying to find little modules or little things where we say, okay, this is a well-known process now.
Right.
If you would really like to help us out, please take this process and start doing it every week, every month, whatever, so that the rest can concentrate on the things that everybody just needs.
Right, yeah, totally. I agree. Actually, the one thing, although I have, well, in my experience, I don't know, like, I have found, actually, like, is, like, when you ask people, like, please do this because you're interested in this, like, actually, like, sometimes, like, that approach, I'm not sure, like, that approach has mixed results, and I'm actually kind of wondering, like, what, if anybody else has any experience with that, but basically, like, the cool thing about bureaucracy is, like, you can do everything, right, but there's also the downside that, like, sometimes it's sort of, like, you know, it's kind of, like, what are you doing, like, you're just complaining, just go do it.
Yeah.
It's kind of unsupported, too, like, in certain ways. So, like, I guess, like, so that's one of the, kind of, like, I don't know if anybody else, like, felt that way, or I don't know if you've had that experience, like, or just being like.
Do you want to explain the duocracy principle of Noisebridge?
Oh, sure. Duocracy. That's right. Duocracy is it's actually from Burning Man, and basically the idea is the governance is done by doing. So if you do it, that's the governance, basically.
So I can't hear you at all.
Yeah.
Oops. So
what he's saying, I think, is basically decisions are made based on the fact that you stop complaining or talking about it, but you actually do something towards implementing something, etc. It's a little bit like with code.
Or the example, it's sort of an inversion of management. So basically, like, in your typical, like, management, you're like, okay, let's plan this out, let's plan roles, you do this or whatever, right? But and you have, like, a governance that's sort of doing it, but in bureaucracy, it's
let's,
like,
have a show of hands. Who has a governance model in their space? Who has a bunch of people who get to say what and what does not happen? Okay, so one space does. How could you explain how your governance model works?
What space are you from?
I helped start Makerspace Urbana in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, United States. But I have been away from that space for almost a year.
Okay.
I helped start that. So when I describe something, it's kind of a year out of touch.
Yeah.
But I still stay in touch with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely do have a group of people who have physical control over the space. That is a group of key staff people. So these are people who actually hold, like, a physical key to the space. And they are a consensus-based entirely. And you know, the invitation to become key staff is basically based on how much you do, how active you are in the space, how much trust you have from the existing key staff. It's a very
so key staff invites people to join the key staff from the rest of the space, basically.
Right.
This sounds very much like the circle.
C-Base
has the circle, which is board members can't be a part of the circle and vice versa. And the circle are elected from the membership by the circle. And they get
not elected, but mostly invited.
Invited, yeah.
Based on credit or you know, knowledge ability or whatever.
And they are the decision makers, and the board gets veto on every decision. So.
Also, one of my spaces, actually, we have the opposite approach to what you're having. We actually just hand out keys to everybody, to cool people. If you're cool, you get a key. And actually, I'll give you all keys if I can find a key maker shop. So it's okay if all one of y'all visit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Key
oh, great. Okay. So yeah, so if any of you guys want keys in Nose Ridge, just ask me. I'll get you a copy. Yeah.
Do you not have a problem feeling responsibility? Feeling responsible for this thing?
Probably this particular person, Nose Ridge is the most probably open space that. That there is, and yeah, we do have. I mean, with that model, we do get a lot of issues. Like we do get unstable people coming in. We do get people with alcohol coming in. But on the other hand, we get the most amazingly awesome people coming in that we wouldn't have ever done. So it's actually a very rich community. It's worked out really really well. We get people from all over the world, especially from CCC. We'll get keys and be like, hey, you just show up and. It's really great for travelers. So
we're kind of in the middle in the sense that every member who pays the deposit on the RFID blob and the key can get a key
right.
As long as they stay a paying member. And even then, we don't really have a key retraction system yet. So
right. I mean,
I don't know.
One thing with social systems.
Boots, the artifact you're going to be able to say anyone who paid membership is gets a key.
Yeah.
Unless they want to pay less membership and become just a regular non-key member. So we kind of have two levels.
All right.
In terms of management, we do have a management committee, which basically they're empowered to make sure that the space stays open, and that's it.
There's a particular thing we clearly defined early on, is that being on committee gives you no extra privileges. We wanted it to be basically you're doing your part of the space by being on the committee. There's certain roles, like I'm part of the infrastructure subcommittee, so I help manage the maintaining the doors and stuff. But it was mainly we started with committee model because we need a committee to be a non-profit organisation in Australia.
Right.
So that was just a bureaucracy thing. And that gave us certain places we had to have. And we figured we'd extend that a little bit early on in the space, and we ended up with the subcommittee structure.
So this is something, I talked about with the London guys, and I helped introduce it at Tech Inc., and I think now is in London as well, which is the subgroup principle, which is where each kind of specialised area within the space has its own subgroup with its own responsibility and maybe some power and maybe some budget. So in our space, we have a subgroup for the tools, you have a subgroup for the network, subgroup for the AV stuff, and so on. So if you're new, or if you want something done specifically, you go to that group and ask them.
The problem there, though, that I detect, so here's a disclaimer. I'm the director of the board. Currently, the board is seven strong, so seven people in total, including me. And the problem is that what we said in the beginning when we started out the space is that the board is just going to be this little group of people who keeps the door open, makes sure the rent gets paid, and if somebody from the police calls, they say, we do our thing, and that's it. We're just the legal contact. What it ends up being, sadly, is that you get a group of very active people who feel, strongly about the space. They end up being in the board or around the board, and then suddenly everything that gets done, because they're also the active people, is being seen as, oh yeah, the board organized this or that, and suddenly everybody else just waits for this group of people to start doing things. Well, the board says, no, we are just supposed to keep this fucking building open. If you want to do something, please go ahead.
Definitely.
You don't need our permission to be awesome.
Definitely.
And that's a weird, weird thing, because you have to draw from the same pool of people in the space to have a good board. And the core team and the rest, so you end up with the board being the people that you want to not be in the board to offload all the work or basically do the things that the board has no job doing or being.
Would most of you sympathize with that view?
Yeah.
So
jump into this.
Yes, of course.
We got a little bit late, so we don't know what's the
there's a...
If you're here for lock picking, that's not... Go ahead.
Shit. we're from the Warsaw Hackerspace. One of the board members is somewhere trying to find this room, so...
Not that one, too. So that's easy.
In the Warsaw Hackerspace, we also have a board, because the Warsaw Hackerspace is now officially a...
Verein?
Oh, hi. An association, an official NGO association, whatever, because we had to do this together. The space rented not on a single person, but on an entity. And we, and the board, this is Zebu, this is the board member.
Hello.
The way I see it, the board works more as a wet blanket. Because of all the regulations, all the laws in Poland, the board is usually, does something like, okay, you cannot do that, or you cannot do that this way, because otherwise we will go to jail. So it makes a lot of sense, obviously, because somebody has to do it, otherwise there will be problems. But we have a little problem with people that want to be members of the hackerspace as a place or a community, but don't want to, be a part of the bureaucracy. I can understand that. I'm a privacy activist, whatever. So, and while I know that I am more of a public person, so I don't have a problem with that, I have to sign the papers anyway, but I understand that there are some people that don't want to sign the papers, not because they don't trust these particular board members, but because this is bureaucracy, this is, going into the system, and they don't want to have their names anywhere nearby. So we are trying to find a solution for that. We're not sure how to do that, and my question is, does anybody here, first of all, had this problem earlier, and second of all, found a solution that would be workable? What we are thinking, and this is, something we're discussing, is to have the non-bureaucratic members be tied up to one
a
proxy, basically, right? So that somebody that is a member, full member, of the association would get two keys, would get two accounts, and he or she would be responsible for those two accounts, and then the...
And if there's any trouble, some legal trouble or whatever, then the proxy is obliged to get out the papers or whatever forms or names or whatever to the authorities or whoever needs those. Mm-hmm.
Is it limited to just one extra?
Right now we are trying to...
We're discussing that.
But the paperwork or the bureaucracy inside the space, what kind of things are that? It's just the membership, right?
Membership,
that's for tax purposes. Well, and for us, we also have to give the copy of the passport in order to get the key of the building. So that's even bigger problem for people who care about privacy.
The only thing we require is some membership declaration, which is the name.
Yeah.
I think we're going to require the address, the name, and the signature, and your email address so that we can contact you.
Yeah. Basically, why the reasons we need those declarations is obviously the tax reasons, and
we actually don't have that.
And, the second reason is that at some point we will have to have the internal regulation or whatever, because this is required by law.
So
safety, fire safety, etc. So that everybody will have to actually sign that. Yes, we've read those regulations, whatever, and if we cut ourselves, this is our own fault and not that. Somebody didn't tell us not to go close to this.
Can I ask, do you have to declare to the authorities the list of members in the space?
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if they ask, if they come and ask, we have to give them.
Yeah.
We don't have to do it, all the time. And it doesn't have to be with the,
The people that actually have access are the board members, three people. But the problem is that those who are against giving out their information say that the board members can change, and they don't trust the position, they may trust the actual members.
Okay.
But from the institution itself.
Because you can have the government come in and get the member declarations. Mm-hmm. So, and if there is a proxy, the proxy can say, fuck you, I'm taking the blame now. Whatever, right? Because this is a different relationship, this is a friend-to-friend relationship with the ghost member and not the bureaucracy.
Like one possible solution would be if they're maybe not even members at all. Because for us, I'm from Homestead of Mannheim, and we keep the space pretty much as open as possible, and you can actually look, I think it's open 90% of the time, and the only policy we have is if it's open, there has to be at least one member in there, and that's for insurance reasons. So, and if you're not a member and the space is open, you can come by any time.
So,
so that would be a solution for if you don't want to be a member because you don't want to use your name to be on, I don't know, some piece of paper, just still be a member. And I mean, the only disadvantage is you can't go to the space like anytime you want. But maybe you can just, like most of the time you can just call someone and be like, hey, I want to go to the space in like an hour. You want to join me? And that's it.
Yeah. Then is that there's the problem of, you know, there will be many more people in the hacker space than in the association, you know, bureaucracy. And the problem is that this bureaucracy is the power that be that decides, you know, about the space, the place, etc., etc.
Well, for us it doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So there's a meeting once a month, and it doesn't really matter if you're a member or not. Like, you can be there and be like, okay, this is my opinion, and everyone can decide on it.
Yeah, the purpose also that, I don't know, but we want to have members, we have to have paying members, because we have financial trouble right now. Well, we only have like 30 paying members.
But can't
and
you?
We cannot take money from non-members.
Why not?
Yes.
Donation?
The Polish law, well, you can't get donations? Yes, the donation law in Poland is really fucked up.
You can have donations, but you can't have donations that, for example, if you donate us 30, we cannot say that if you donate us, I know, $20 per month, then that you can say that this gives you a card, an entry card.
It cannot be quid pro quo.
Obviously,
it
has to be absolutely no profit from the donations.
It has to be for a service or a benefit.
Yeah.
No benefit.
You sort of need a bit of leverage on people because they kind of tend to forget to pay.
So this is the other thing. So being able to not punish but control your membership. I mean, I actually only know one space with a policy for banning members, which is London. And I know Seabase is doing that now. But does anybody, any other space here have a policy or a process for punishing and banning members?
We've never used it.
Okay.
We have one.
It pretty much requires, it's also written constitution. It requires that if we're actually going to eject a member, we have to hold a secret ballot with the entire membership.
Wow. How big's your membership at the time?
50 odd.
Oh, no, nice.
So yeah, we're small, but we come from there's only 2.1 million people in our state, and the size of Europe. But we've never used the ejection policy. We've had troublesome members, but they've always managed to just realise that they're perhaps not hackerspace compatible and left. We do have a policy on the books then that it has never been used.
We clean up our members list for people who don't show up and don't pay and don't do anything because... So.
Yeah, but it's cleaning up. I mean, if you have people that do come and do pay, but you don't want them anymore, I think that's more...
Yeah, so if people don't pay their membership for 3 months, we deem them to have decided not to be a member anymore and they get cancelled. But there's, you know, we only eject people if they've done something pretty horrifying
like
bad. Like
setting it on fire.
Our official process comes from... the Makerspace Urbana is couched in a larger organization called the Independent Media Center in Champaign, so... Some of the legal problems we don't actually have because we're actually just, we just rent space from this larger organization. But the larger organization also has what we call a steering group that is run by consensus. And that steering group has the power to ban individuals from the larger independent media center as a whole. So we rely on that structure for bad actors within the space.
And does that actually get enacted at all, or I mean?
So our personal experience has been, you know, we rarely rely on that official structure. It is more of a, you know, we rely on a more of a noise bridge style. If you aren't excellent to someone, you will be confronted.
Right.
You know, and there are people within the space who take it personally upon themselves to do that, and that tends to work out pretty well. I mean, as to my knowledge, no one's ever been banned. But they've been confronted about being awesome.
Okay. One of the things that I want to note, though, is that we've currently drifted off more to the how did the active people in the organization form themselves and do all the management around it. But the discussion started out as a who here has good ideas or good tools or good suggestions of actually activating the other 80% of the iceberg. so to speak, who are there, do a lot of things, but either we don't see it, or, you know, how to get it more into a vibrant community. Something like Noisebridge seems to work very nicely, but Noisebridge also depends a lot on the whole act of own initiative. If you're there and you're not doing something yourself, then basically nothing's going to happen.
Well, that's not true, actually. We rely on our radical openness. I'm involved with three spaces, so I can talk about three different approaches, but I'll just talk about Noisebridge, which is our radical openness is what keeps the space going and fresh, like, because there's so much stuff that needs to get done, and people are going to burn out, people are going to, the organization can't sustain itself without fresh people coming in, basically. So if stuff gets broken, everybody is there. If they want to fix it, they can fix it. And everybody is empowered to touch every equipment at any point from the moment you walk into the space. So things in our experience, things like security, these things are actually not the problems. The more security you have, actually, that's a trade-off against openness towards other people, basically, is what it kind of seems to boil down to. The things that you would think are problems are not actually unsolvable problems. Like having strange people come into space or theft is not the big killers in our experience for sure. So what is the big killer? And I think Mitch Alden will also agree with me is that when you have one person that tends to be an obstructionist and wants to kind of control the whole space or whatever, that can really dampen stuff. But in another space that we're working on, every single space though that I'm working on, basically we're all having conversations on how to get people activated and engaged, and we're all kind of converging onto this idea of everybody's talking about forming groups of welcoming people, of going outreach, of inclusion,
outreach is actually going from the space out to schools or something like that?
That type of outreach as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. But basically every space, we've had meetings about basically when people come into the space, how do we, get people involved as people, hey, who are you, just get them into, just be inclusive, basically, and that is a discussion that's every topic, because I think the common theme that I'm hearing over and over again at all these places is that talking about this a train is basically people are when they come into a space they have all this fear about themselves, right? They're afraid that I'm not competent enough, I don't have the social skills, I don't have the technical skills, I'm not a hacker, and they're very curious, they really want to do this, but it's breaking past those initial psychological barriers, and once you do that, then you have a really quite active community. It takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of community, trust in the people.
So you have one dedicated group of people who does regularly, continuously,
ongoing. Every space is sort of different. At Noisebridge, it's just sort of. It's like the internet, it just sort of happens, basically, you talk about it and people sort of start doing it. But at Pseudo Room, which is much, much smaller, we are actually having, a regular ongoing community conversation and actually talking about specific tactics to use for this type of stuff.
Elaborate a bit?
So specific tactics. So at Pseudo Room, especially, I'm kind of going back to inclusion because... one of the things that that ties into this also is getting more women, getting more minorities, it's not just about that. But it's the same principles basically. It's the issues of getting anybody into the door is fundamental, and getting anybody activated basically is fundamental, how do you get them to have confidence in themselves how do you get them? We're taught basically. Okay, this is the thing. We're taught from school that if you say something wrong, if you make a mistake, you're stupid, it's bad. This is the programming that we actually have to. We're taught that failure is a bad thing, and it's a program that we have to deactivate. Right? We have to like the thing that we need to encourage to everybody is that like failure, you want to fail as much as possible. A failure is a victory, like, because it means you're doing something, you're learning something. So like I know some people like there's this like, don't be on fire. I think that's a great rule, but I would actually have a rule of like. I would actually invert that rule. I'd be like,
But so your tactic really is to just have these ethics that you want to have a key role in the space to make those ethics explicit. Actually, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely. I mean, people are attracted. Value explication is very important. Basically, I think people. That's how people. Become a community, like even when you're going in a job process or whatever, like it's really not about your skills, it's about your values. So, like, but yeah, and how you do that is a big question.
I think you know, putting those into practice is, you know, like, you know, like, you know, physical format is what's challenging.
Right.
In Makerspace Urbana, we one of our most powerful tools has been workshops that are designed to engage groups of people that don't typically consider themselves hackers. So, like, we have had sewing workshops, we've had art workshops where we invited a local artist to come and show people how to, you know, bolt and lead, you know, and things like that. So we'll invite people from outside the space to add, you know, to put on a workshop, you know, and one of the strongest weekly things that we have is actually a computer help desk. So we'll have like people from the space will volunteer to help people in the community learn to fix their own computers. And so that also exposes people to the space, and it's also a revenue generator when we provide that service. And people freely donate, you know, much, much less than they would have to pay, you know, to get the computer fixed somewhere else. Meanwhile, they're getting that hands-on experience within the space. The people who are not normally activated as hackers learning to fix things in, you know, like a non-traditional way that we would think of as like a hackerspace activity. So I think finding those ways to, you know, activate people in a non-hacker way, activate non-hackers and bring them into the space and get them, you know, invite them is key. And designing those workshops according to those ethics that you described, you know, bringing more women into the space, bringing more minorities. You know.
And if I could actually follow up on one more point, actually, like, one of the key underlying things here is that, like, basically, in society, none of us are taught to be leaders, and that's, like, a role that's reserved for very few people. But in basically, like, what we're actually doing is we're asking everybody to develop their leadership skills, like, right? And that's basically, like, that's what you're actually asking, and that's what the community, yeah, right? So,
awesome. With that table, considering yourselves non-hackers, I think you can actually, at the Artifact, we've got everything from electronics to pantomime. So I think that's, with people considering themselves non-hackers, would actually, like an electronics hacker might not think of themselves as a textiles hacker. I think that's an important extension to that.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, it gives the people who would normally consider themselves, you know, like electronic hackers or software hackers, you know, what hardware hackers or whatever, exposure to things that they might not have normally considered hacking or considered, like, things that they could integrate into, you know, their work, into their art.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it works out well for everyone.
That's really cool, by the way, that you're doing that. That's actually, like, I think I'm going to steal your idea. Actually, I'll talk to you about that.
Okay. Can I steal some of yours?
Yeah, for please. Very cool.
So about the outreach that you mentioned, what we used to do, and I guess we will continue doing, is presenting our hackerspace on other events. So there are a lot of different events in Amsterdam where we just go and do a lightning talk, or go to schools, universities, and talk to students, which two of them did. Again, I'm not sure how to measure the success of that, but the more we talk about ourselves, and to show that we are also just normal people, we are not those hackers, those evil hackers, and you're welcome to our space, and you don't have to be a genius to come to work with us, stuff like that. I think that helps too.
Another thing maybe for outreach that we just recently started doing, maybe like 2 months ago, one of our members had a friend who was looking for a place to do a concert, like a small living room style concert. So we did that and had a whole bunch of people that normally wouldn't come to a hackerspace visit us. And then that got actually quite a lot of, I don't know, noise around it. So we actually had two other artists ask us if they can do a concert at our space. And I guess it's just going to keep going. And that way you just get people that normally wouldn't, they probably don't even know what a hackerspace is, and they would still just come and we can give them a short tour and show them what we're doing, and maybe they're interested and maybe they'll stay.
So this is what I try to do. Like I said before, when you try and get hackers to come to your hackerspace, you're preaching to the choir. They'll find you anyway. So I personally, what I try and do is I invite all the designers and artists and the people who would not normally come to a hackerspace. I do my best to rope them in, and maybe 1 out of 10 might think about coming back, let alone be a member. But I saw at London, where the community is so diverse, with 550 members, you get all kinds, shapes, sizes of people coming. And it really is, it's brilliant to have your core community kind of bolstered by other people with other skill sets and knowledge and interests.
Well, the Lightning Talks events that we had were very, very much a signal of that, in the sense that we... Which was the guy that had history of the Etruscan Empire?
This guy rocks up. He's like, I want to do a talk on the history of the Etruscan Empire?
I don't remember exactly.
We never say no. If somebody wants to do a lightning talk at our place, the only things we say no to are like sales pitches and stuff like that. So this guy stood up for 10 minutes and wowed us all. We wanted more, but he had to go. So
it was funny.
It was really, really interesting.
And that it also helps to pull a lot of different people in there, because all these people from different walks of life have their own little friend networks who will be inviting, you know, like, oh, please come and see this lightning talk that I'm doing there. And then they end up being there for this one guy, but, oh, hold on, that also is really cool, and that's cool. And then you get this cross-pollination of things going on, which nobody really expected. So. With us, we've tried a couple of really technical events, and then you get the usual suspects all sitting there in the usual places. But the moment you start mixing really, really completely different ideas and just putting them all on the same schedule, everybody's like,
what?
Really? What? Wow. That helped really a lot. Those have been some of the most cool events that we've done. So that I recognize still as being one of the success stories.
Can you give an example of some of the different ideas that you mixed?
We had one...
Talk about the last one. So the last one...
Canta Ballet.
Oh, the Canta
Ballet.
Ballet
was awesome.
Yeah. That was awesome. But,
so the
weird
last...
different things?
Yeah.
Right. We had the woman who has multiple sclerosis and participated in a ballet in small little cars that are made for invalid...
disability.
Disabled people. And they made a ballet, so she described the whole process of how the fuck do you even come to that kind of idea, and
she did it with the Royal Dutch Ballet Company, by the way. This wasn't like a little thing; it was a proper full-on with professional ballet.
Middle of Amsterdam, and then like a large
gas storage thing.
Well, a professional venue.
That's
considerable.
Awesome.
Another one, we had a woman. Is basically involved in coordinating groups and finding out how leadership structures work. She did a talk about, you know, how people organize things organically, and why sometimes the leader is not actually the leader, but the pack is actually the leader. The leader is just the guy that signals what the pack is going to.
She was really funny because she walked into the space and was like, I'm not interested in this.
Yeah.
I'm only here because my husband wants to see all this technical crap. I don't care about it.
And
I went, oh, so what's your interest? She was like, oh, well, I kind of help manage and run communities. I was like, sit down, let me introduce you to a hackerspace. So now she's, not only is she renting an office in the same building as us, but she's actively helping us develop our kind of community side as well. So that was quite nice.
The Etruscan Empire. With
that was awesome.
So, yeah, it's really being a good tool to pull in as wide a selection as possible, instead of saying, okay, we're going to dedicate this one to cryptography only.
Yeah.
You will get all the cryptographers there, but nobody else anymore, and that's kind of a tricky thing. And
I highly recommend, if you're going to do the lightning talk thing, don't go and ask all your mate to do, like, crypto party and... They'll do it anyway. Go and ask the people who you wouldn't normally ask.
Yeah.
it's also maybe a great way to get more people involved in stuff. Because that's, well, we sort of started, well, I organized them for like a year, lightning talks in our space, and we do them once a week.
Wow.
So after like a month or two, it was sort of hard to get people to just like be okay, I have this talk. So I ended up going to random people who were like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, you want to do a talk on that? Just like 5 minutes. And so, well, after a while, you kind of know what the other people are actually doing that are most of the time just sitting there and staring at their laptops, maybe. So maybe that's also a way to get more activity in the space.
Yeah.
We've tried to create artificial...
I accidentally bullied one of our members.
Wait, we have only 10 more minutes. So can we move to another topic, which
come
is something
later,
that
yeah.
we...
About the color yellow.
Yeah.
That we... experienced as a problem recently, and that's the camera policy and privacy, surveillance, taking photos, making videos. So
it's two different things, actually. The one is surveillance, and the other one is privacy, as in if somebody wants to take a picture of something going on in the space,
how do
you actually have to ask everybody, or is there some, you know, how do you do that?
So how do you do that?
We have just one room, so you just ask.
You have to ask.
Everyone else?
Yeah, people get corrected if they don't.
Right.
So.
Okay.
They can collect their camera in four pieces.
Not the first time.
So you basically say no pictures in the space unless everybody agrees who is in there.
Yeah, or if you the people who are on the picture.
Right.
Yeah.
Anybody else who has
who
recognizes
yeah.
this approach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was hacker space works basically very similar, but the question is usually, does anybody have anything against?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same question, but on the other side, and usually it's
okay. I think in practice it works that way.
Yeah,
what
you find is that if only two people don't want the photos taken and 50 people don't care, they tend to get pushed down and it's unimportant.
No, but they can leave the rooms where the photos are taken and can be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, but it's still kind of
taking photos all the time in events. So people don't want to stand up to say, I don't want to be in the photos because they're the only ones.
Even worse, of course, if you have something like a lightning talk thing where a lot of people from external people come, they're the Facebook, Twitter crowd, it's like, oh, if it's not on an Instagram picture, it didn't happen. So yeah, and they'll be snapping their iPhones all the time. That's something we can't even try to avoid. But even during our own in-crowd people, people want to take pictures, and then your approach seems to work well enough, but it's tricky.
I guess it's a two-way approach also, because it's not only the people that want to take the picture, also those who do not want to be in the picture. Like I know in the space for us, there's maybe like 3-4 people who don't want to be on the internet in any pictures in any way. And like if there's a talk, they know they're not going to sit in the first row because they might be in the picture, so they go like, I don't know, a little farther back, so that's just not an issue.
Well,
for them at least. And I mean, for most of the people who are active in the space are there more than just like once they know who doesn't want to be in a picture. So it works for them. I mean, there's still this issue with people who are in there for like the first time or something. So at least it's a lot easier that way.
We've tried to also struggle with this. We had a meeting where we laid it out, like, okay, we've had a couple of signals, and you know, what do people want, or what is a good suggestion? Some people came up with, let's just dedicate one little part of the space, one little corner, where if you really don't want to be photographed, you can sit there. But it's still kind of a back of the bus type of approach. It's like, you can't do anything in the space unless you can do it in that little corner, because of the perceived tyranny of photography, which on the other side is for other people oppressing, because I just want to make a photograph. What's the big deal if your name is not on there, just your face, who knows who you are, you know? So it's a very tricky problem we have to tackle. And it seems that most of it's more pragmatic, like asking as such.
And video cameras also very much in favor, and many people are quite against.
It's been a very touchy subject in London. A lot of people are very much in favor, a lot of people really hate. I think, not anymore. Well, they're available to members only, they're not publicly aware of them.
Can you turn off if you want to turn off the camera? You can't walk through that server, that bit.
No.
Everyone is covered by webcams in the London.
It's not everything, but it's the majority of projects.
The dark room.
The toilets.
Yeah. It depends what Tom wants to do.
It really helps to have whatever policy you have printed out and attached to the walls, so anyone as soon as they walk through the door will know what the policy is.
Well, we have 5 more minutes, so any closing words?
There was one more controversial project thing. Do other people have problems with projects that some members find controversial, maybe things that can help criminal activity or something used in some ways? We've had some issues that people said this project should not be associated with the space because it gets all into trouble. And other people have said, well, just because criminals can use it doesn't mean other people can't use it for good things.
Concretely, it was a privacy plausible deniability tool for file systems. And a great project. A number of people said this is exactly what a hackerspace should be involved in. A number of people said, yeah, but you know, I just want to do projects here, and if our hackerspace is going to be killed by the police because of, you know, aiding and abetting terrorist activity by providing handy tools, then I can't do my soldering project anymore. So I would like to see this gone. So that was the dichotomy there. We've actually had a meeting about it, and now we're setting up a committee who's going to study, like, what should we do, and should there be a veto or not? But is there any other?
We had a long discussion in the Wars and Other Space similar to that. And basically, the line that kind of, you know, summarizes it is that, you know, a hackerspace isn't just a basement that has been rented by several people. It's a little bit more than that. There's some ethos. There are some other things happening there, right? So if that was just a co-working space, I would say maybe this project wouldn't be a good idea. But this is not a co-working space. It's a hackerspace. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is, you know.
We vote on everything in our space because we're about 20 to 25 active people. So everything can actually be voted on and everything will be discussed. And I mean, there are some things where some people have to take reliability for it, mostly members of the board. And I would just, I don't stand up for everything. So I would retract from the board if there would be a vote, which I wouldn't carry.
Are you an association, or?
Yes.
Does the law work in Germany? Because this was one of the things that popped up with us.
Austria.
Austria, sorry. For us, it's outside the border. No, in all seriousness, in Holland we have the association law, which basically says that if members voted yes on something, then it's the members, the association, who is responsible, not the board. The board only has gross misconduct if they fail to recognize something that has to be voted on. But once the members say yes in a majority, then it's not the board that can be told, hey, that's illegal, it's the whole thing.
Yeah, but if financial liability arises, the board members will be liable first.
Financial liability.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right, but yeah. So.
And you can't vote on something illegal. You can't make something illegal. You can't do this.
Okay, with us, that was the other thing we said. If all the members of the space vote to grow marijuana in this space, then that's a legal thing from the organization point of view. As in, then we'll do that. It's still illegal, but you know, in the process of the association, it's still legal, and then nobody is personally responsible, which is weird. For a while, at least, I think, in theory.
But. Huh? I have some of your marijuana.
Yeah, just come by and see me. So yeah, that was an interesting finding. Like, yeah, how do you do that? How can you actually say, when do you determine what thing is illegal or not? You know, we're still working on this, and we're hoping a usable proposal drops out. But
basically, we came to the conclusion that the hackerspace won't cover up for everything. So. We cover it for some things, and that there are some things we can't actually enforce. So
I think
we feel quite confident about that, but we won't cover up for everything. And we surely won't cover up for Mariana Pantash in our rooms, because we there is no deniability, there is no stuff that saves the people who will actually be liable if shit comes down.
What we did, what is probably going to happen in our space is that everything is fine until somebody signals, hey, this is something which we should have a vote on, and then probably there's going to be a voting mechanism outside of Standway where you basically say you have until this moment to actually vote, because what happened is that a couple of vocal people came up with good arguments and the rest was like, okay, is this even an issue, you know? And then the people who had that project were either intimidated or pragmatic enough to say, okay, we'll take our stuff somewhere else. And then the other guys came and said, but hold on, what just happened? We just lost a great project because two people had concerns and we didn't even have any kind of due process as to say, yeah, this is exactly what the rest of us want. And that was the problem there.
Any other experiences with that? Sorry.
Only more problems with the jukebox or music storage. Are you documented well or better not? So,
who has problems with the cleaning and doing the dishes? I've said it before. You fix that. You've
got to fix that. In Australia,
yeah.
Make a void in Canberra. And I believe one of their members is at Congress. Right? They got a $2,000 a year peppercorn rent from the government, and that includes government workers who come in and clean their toilets and clean up their kitchen.
How can we fix that? Lawyers are just fix that.
Tell us
now.
Okay.
We all want to know.
Let's check us back for radical openness. And actually, like, you know, this talk about banning people sleeping and all these people, like, that they function in a very, you know, people that are sort of marginal, like, they actually have a very useful use, which is cleaning dishes. Taking care of the space. You want people that are sort of groundskeepers. Like, it's openness will work for you.
Sounds a bit wrong. Don't know why. It's
a trap.
So it's you're basically saying that instead of building a building and then saying you need a concierge or a janitor to clean up, you basically just open a building and then the janitor will come by himself.
I'm saying, you know, people will need to, like, and I'm not even saying marginal people. I'm saying, like, you know, there might be a traveling hacker that just needs to stay in your space or something like that. That's actually a great win-win because they'll just, like, take care of the space while you're kind of, you know, letting them crash or whatever. So, like, that they'll kind of just, like, and so the ecosystem can work out. But, like, it's about using openness, right, like, to advantage.
The more people that are doing it, the more other people feel they should be joining in because everyone else is busy talking.
And did everyone actually pay for somebody to come and clean, somebody external?
Yes,
London does, yeah.
But yeah, one day a week.
Okay.
I don't think we should have done that.
Is it working? Does it help?
I don't visit often enough to see the results of it. I'm often there on the weekend, which is 5 days after they were on, so it was a bit dirty.
Thanks for a day.
Yeah.
I know it's from the Meta Lab in Vienna that they have an alarm going off at 9 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the evening,
yeah,
and the whole room starts blinking and that everybody has to clean up.
I love that.
So there was one.
Don't people just not come at 9 o'clock?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
I just go home at
9:50.
There's one London Hackspace member who put a connector on the sink in the London Hackspace and measured the depth of the sink. So when it was full of dishes, it would like sound an alarm. So what someone eventually did was just unplug all the bloody alarms and let the system.
Problem solved.
There, I fixed it.
Tokyo, they had a shared space with two companies, and one of them is really business related. So their businessmen come in each day, so they have to vacuum the room for after each meeting and stuff like that. So they have to stay really tidy there, and it works pretty well, I guess. It works well, but they can't use their tools at the moment.
No.
Trade-offs. Okay, I think we are 5 minutes over
time.
Yeah,
we need to leave.
Should be good guests to the people next door by leaving.
And there is maybe a third follow-up. So somebody wanted to organize a third part tomorrow at 2 p.m. I'm not sure they put it in the workshop schedule. Maybe they did. So if you hear more people wanting to discuss this, tell them that there will be a third part.
Sure. Okay. Thank you for organizing.
Thank you.